You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. We are here on the America Out Loud Network. On this program, we talk about all things law enforcement. So, without further ado, let's take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. The biggest story in the news this week in law enforcement is the tragic, horrible shooting of an innocent woman who was standing in her home in Fort Worth, Texas, when she was shot by a Fort Worth police officer. The situation has escalated to a point where, once again, there are marches in the streets, calls for justice, unrest, a police department in disarray, leadership calling for changes and justice, and police leadership basically throwing their own people under the bus. Now, let's talk about what happened, and then we'll talk about some other things that are taking place in the political environment that has resulted in what I believe is another injustice. So let's talk about the situation. The homeowner in this story is Atiana Jefferson. And she was basically minding her own business. She's in her home. She's playing with her 8-year-old nephew at 2:30 in the morning. And they're playing video games. What she did not know was that a neighbor had seen that she had left her door open and called the police because they were concerned about her. The call that this is titled under is called Check the Welfare. And Check the Welfare calls are very, very common in policing. They can literally run the gamut from the most mundane which is that there is absolutely nothing wrong, or the most dramatic, where a body and a murder scene is found. This particular call was something that that started out as very, very mundane. A neighbor contacted the Fort Worth police and said, "It's very unusual for my neighbor to leave her door open. Can you come check the welfare?" Now remember, this is 2:30 in the morning, okay? So police get there. Two officers get there. And they see that the front door is ajar, but the screen door, storm door, is closed. So before they knocked on the door, apparently they decided to do a little reconnaissance. And this is an important topic to talk about, because in the criticism taking place about what subsequently happened, the officers are being basically blamed for doing this. And what they did was, now this is according to reports in the media, and also the released body camera footage that was released literally within a day of this shooting. It appears that the officers are checking the perimeter of the house. Now, this is a critical moment in time because it led to what happened just seconds later. So the officers are walking around, and what they're doing is they're checking to see if there are any signs of violence, if there is a sign of an entry, anything that would be out of the ordinary before they try and make contact with people inside the home. And this is solid police work. There's nothing wrong with this. This is what you do. You have no idea what you're walking into in any set of circumstances, especially a check the welfare call. So these officers were checking to see if there was anything out of place. As they are walking back to the front of the house, ostensibly to make contact or knock on the door, the officer suddenly draws his weapon, yells, "Show me your hands," and then fires at a person behind a window. That person was the homeowner, Tatiana Jefferson. And he shot one round. That round killed her. The officers then made entry and found a gun on the floor. So I should mention that Ms. Jefferson is black. The officer who shot her was white. Fairly new officer. I think he had 7 months on the job. Well, within a day, the chief of police was on the television just vilifying this officer, talking about how he couldn't understand why he did it, and basically just completely throwing him under the bus. Now, I was thinking, when I'm reading the accounts, there's very little that gives any indication of what the officer saw. In fact, there's nothing. There's no evidence about what he saw that led him to open fire on this woman. I'm trying to read between the lines that I don't understand quite what's going on here. Well, within a day, the officer resigned, and the chief said if he didn't resign, I was going to fire him. And the next day, they arrest him for murder. And, I mean, it is a political firestorm. There's an attorney who is a race-baiting attorney. He's got a history of being one of these attorneys who loves to get his face on the news while, making accusations about racism regarding policing that about law enforcement in general being racist and committing crimes against the black community. He's on the news screaming for justice. There's marches in the streets. There's an incredibly fast rush to charging the officer with murder, by the way. Murder. Not manslaughter, not any lesser charge, but murder. And the coverage on the media is, tremendously one-sided. And still, I'm trying to figure out what happened out there to cause this officer to open fire like that. Well, this morning, a news report came out about a witness in the house while this took place. He was the 8-year-old nephew of Miss Jefferson. And what he told investigators was that his aunt and he were playing video games. She heard something out in the yard. So she had a handgun in her purse. She pulled out the handgun and pointed it out the window. Then the officer opened fire. Now, the fact is that she probably heard something, went to the window to protect herself and investigate what was out there. And at that moment, the officer was passing by the window. And now it's pretty clear from this witness that he must have seen the gun and felt the threat and opened fire. Remember, this took place in literally the blink of an eye. So how can they possibly charge this guy with murder? Literally within like 48 hours. You can't conduct a proper homicide investigation in that short period of time. And yet the chief goes out there in the public and completely throws his police officer under the bus without even mentioning the fact that he might have seen a gun. Now, the police had released the body cam footage literally within hours of this shooting, because that's the politically correct thing to do now. They want to be transparent. Okay, I get it. But if you're going to do that, then you want to get the whole story out, or at least as much of it as you know. So they actually showed when they showed the body cam footage, they also showed that there was a gun on the floor. Immediately, they were criticized. Because how dare they put that there was a gun there? Because now, well, holy cow, maybe the police didn't murder this woman. Maybe there really was a threat. But you won't hear that in the mainstream media, and you won't hear it from the police chief. Instead, there are charges being leveled at the police for trying to cover up this shooting. I don't understand how anybody could claim that when in record time they charged this guy with murder. There is hue and cry and you know, calls for the chief to be fired. I tell you the truth, I wouldn't mind him being fired, not because of anything related to this officer, what he did, but because he's so spineless and politically motivated that he showed his absolutely abysmal leadership, and even had the nerve to say that there wasn't a police officer on the Fort Worth Police Department that would have done what this officer did. Really? How the hell do you know that, Chief? You don't even know what the hell you're talking about. You don't know what that officer saw. Now you know that from a witness that she had a gun in her hand and that the officer opened fire. Do you think he just opened fire for the hell of it? You think he just saw somebody in the window and said, oh, yeah, let me shoot her? There needs to be a reckoning. There needs to be a judgment here. But for God's sake, you can't rush that judgment in this knee-jerk fashion, blaming the police. Now, do you think that the Amber Geiger case had something to do with this? I can sure as hell bet you that it did. The fact that that officer, who was found guilty of murder and sentenced to 10 years in prison, that didn't satisfy a number of the quote activists unquote media and politicians. Though they wanted this officer, I mean, probably electrocuted or given the death sentence, but she got 10 years for a shooting, which was another tragic incident. So let's talk about this for a minute. You have two shootings of individuals. One, clearly, the Amber Geiger case was just so bizarre. She thought she was going into her own apartment, and she opened fire on the guy. It's an incredible story, and now she is being held accountable for it, 10 years of her life. Is this rush to conviction and judgment, is this the new norm? Are we now going to, every time a police officer opens fire, are we going to have this incredible second guessing game? This shooting with that just took place, doesn't there have to be a totally objective investigation before a judgment is made? This is what the criminal justice system is supposed to be. And now that these other facts have come out, considering the woman apparently pointed a gun at her, according to her own nephew, don't you think that rises to the level of an individual being in fear for their life? Despite the fact that her intent was only to protect herself and her nephew. You know, there is no finite answer for any activity in policing. The sets of circumstances literally change dramatically from incident to incident, even though there may be some similar fact situations. Officers have to take into account all of the information in their possession at a given moment, and then make a decision as to what to do in a set of circumstances. The officer is responding on a check the welfare call. He has no idea what he's going into. He's doing the right thing by checking around the perimeter of the property and looking to see if there's any activity that would indicate what took place. Now, the chief or the lawyer for the family made some ridiculous comment that the officer should have walked around the house yelling police. I mean, it's so ridiculous. But this is what they're saying, that it's his fault because he didn't identify himself as a police officer. Well, who's he going to identify himself to? He's going to walk around the house on an unknown trouble call with a check to welfare and keep on yelling, "Hey, police are here! Police are here!" It's ridiculous, absurd. And yet, this is the level that people are stooping now in order to hold this police officer accountable in criminal conduct, thrown under the bus by the chief of police, is indicative of what is going on nationwide with law enforcement and why cops are scared to death to even go out in there and do their job. You know, that set of circumstances could happen to literally any cop any day. Reality is this, that this was an innocent woman who, because of the circumstances, found herself face to face with a police officer doing his job. Mistakes happen. Accidents happen. You have to understand the totality of the circumstances before you stand in judgment, especially willing to throw someone who literally was just serving his public when this tragic set of circumstances occurred. Another black eye, if you will, on policing. The objectivity of people is almost nil when it comes down to trying to understand why law enforcement officers make the decisions that they do. There was actually a couple incidents that I'm kind of smiling about that were in the news. You know, there's been so many bad judgment calls, bad adjudications of cases against law enforcement, that I'm almost surprised when I see this week in Olympia Falls, Washington, when two brothers shot by a cop who filed a $25 million lawsuit against the officer. They went to trial. They said that the officer used excessive force. Well, the jury gave him nothing. They said the officer did exactly what he should do, that there was no violation of civil rights. Now, what led up to this? A police officer was investigating a theft of beer where the suspect assaulted a store clerk by throwing a case of beer at them. When the officer got there, he found the suspects, and instead of them doing what he told them to do, which was stop, they attacked him. They attacked him physically. And the officer opened fire while he's under attack by these two punks. Well, one of them was paralyzed in the shooting, and the other was shot. And they decided to sue, because goodness knows it's not their fault. All they did was attack a cop. Why, good Lord, you can't expect him to defend himself. And happily, the jury actually came out and said, nope, not today. And they were very disappointed. Very disappointed. But I consider this a happy ending. And maybe there is hope for the criminal justice system after all. Well, that's about all the time we have here in the briefing room. But we've got a great guest waiting for you in the interview room. And we will be talking to you soon. I've got an announcement to make. It's about a new company. And it's a company that is near and dear to my heart because I'm part of it. And not only am I part of it, but this company was created to help injured and disabled law enforcement officers. This company is called Law Dog Coffee Company. That's right, Law Dog Coffee Company. Tastes so good, it ought to be illegal. Oh, yeah. Now, I got to tell you, I love coffee. I've been drinking it since I was a wee lad. And there's nothing better than sitting in a cold patrol car with a hot cup of coffee. And we have done a deal with the Costa Rican government to bring in some of the finest ethically grown coffee that is available anywhere. It is delicious. And you got to get yourself a bag of it. Go to LawDogCoffeeCompany.com. That's LawDogCoffeeCompany.com. Get yourself a couple bags of fantastic premium coffee. And then get to me on Facebook and tell me what you think about it. Law Dog Coffee Company. Tastes so good. Ought to be illegal. With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is another man on a mission, Jim Fuda. And Jim is a 33-year veteran of law enforcement. He's held many positions, including command positions. But now he has created something that is touching lives globally. He is the CEO of Crime Stoppers Global Solutions. It's a nonprofit that works to basically free girls and women from being trafficked, and also in essence solve all kinds of crimes around the world.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good-tasting gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com.
Jim, thanks so much for joining me on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thanks so much for having me. Anybody that'll listen to me, I'll sit down and speak to. So appreciate it very much.
It's my pleasure. So first of all, let's talk about your police career real quick. And then what we're going to do is we're going to play the audio portion of a video that's out there that really touches the heart with what the issue is. So, but let's talk about your police career first.
Yeah, I was one of the youngest King County Sheriff's Office deputies ever hired. I was one of those guys in the era where I got drafted, did my 21 months, actually, because I got a 3-month early out to join the police department. I turned 21, got discharged, and got hired in a 10-day period. Did a 33-year career, and from there, spent my last 15 years in special operations. I always joked at the big boys with toys, and I got to run such units as Marine and Air Support and a traffic unit for a while. And my main functions was I ran the hostage negotiations team and was on that for 25 years. And when I retired, I had a 5-day break and had something all set up and went to work for as a contractor with the Department of Justice in Pakistan, Indonesia, and Bosnia. And it's in Bosnia is where I really learned a lot about traffickers and routes that they take to get people into Western Europe, people, drugs, guns, those kinds of things. And came back from that in about 2012, and then went to work as one of the directors for our local Crime Stoppers program. Well, in November of 2016, we started using an app called P3 Tips. And I soon learned that our trips quadrupled and our arrests more than doubled in a very short period of time. And I got to thinking that the reason is we're in the gaming generation. I joke I can't get my granddaughter to talk to me on the telephone, but yet she'll text me back in 30 seconds.
Right.
So I decided to take this concept internationally on those crimes without borders. So I picked 7 crimes. Of course, the key one is human trafficking and preferably, as we say, child sex trafficking. But I picked 7: human trafficking, terrorism, illicit trade, arms dealing, drug smuggling, cybercrime, and bank fraud. And each one of those are obviously corruption based. I took it back to the Balkans, where you need trusted police officers to help with this, because imagine these anonymous tips coming in and what damage could be done if that information gets into the wrong hands. So I had this one trusted police commander bring 4 countries together, Bosnia, Serbia, Croatia, and Slovenia. I did 1 presentation and 1 press release and had 47 tips in a week. So the concept will work. But I soon learned is that a local program could not sustain it. So that's when I got some think tank people together from around the globe, and we formed Crime Stoppers Global Solutions to move this concept forward.
Okay.
So that's where we're at.
Okay. So now I'm going to play for my audience, the listeners, the audio portion of the informational video that you have. It's very, very impactful. And where can my listeners actually view the video?
It is on Google. If you Google Crime Stoppers Global Solutions, it should come up.
Very good. Okay, so let's take a listen to that.
Every minute of every day, 2 children are being prepared for sexual exploitation. The average age of these children is 14, but many are as young as 3. Child sexual exploitation is a $14 to $16 billion a year business. The top 3 countries involved in these horrific acts are India, Brazil, and sadly, the United States. I recently heard of a case where 2 16-year-old girls were rescued after being in captivity since they were both 14 and had been raped multiple times a day until they were rescued just last month. As if this wasn't horrific enough, there was a third girl that was not so fortunate. She was taken by her captors, transported to an Eastern European country where her organs were harvested for resale to the highest bidder on the black market. This occurs on a regular basis and is simply cold-blooded, premeditated murder and needs to be stopped. Crime Stoppers Global Solutions has developed state-of-the-art app technology where citizens can report crimes anywhere in the world anonymously without fear of retribution for criminals. Once an anonymous citizen has submitted a tip utilizing the secure app, that information will immediately be sent to trusted law enforcement detectives for investigation. This simple process gives a voice to citizens, allows them to submit valuable criminal information, and enables all of us to do our part to stop child sex trafficking. Here's how your tax-deductible donation helps in this vital cause. Supports the necessary technology that aids in gathering crucial intelligence on traffickers anywhere in the world. Supports local Crime Stopper Global Solutions programs in developing countries. Creates a reward fund to pay tipsters for key information that leads to an arrest and charges of child sex traffickers. Please give your tax-deductible donation today. You can give a one-time donation or register to give on a monthly basis. You can give $100, $50, $25, or even $5 a month. Every dime of what you pledge will go directly towards saving a child from a life of physical and sexual abuse and possibly murder. Together, we can help stop these types of violent crimes against innocent children. Together, we can make a difference. Remember, every minute of every day, two children are being prepared for sexual exploitation. You know what you would do if this was your child. Please, please help us to do the same for those children who have no voice. For more information, go to www.thecsgs.org. Once again, www.thecsgs.org. I'm Jim Fuda, founder and vice chairman of Crime Stoppers Global Solutions. Thank you.
I think that everybody that heard that will really get an understanding of the concept of what you're trying to accomplish, and also the gravity of this horrible situation. I mean, you know, we've been hearing more about human trafficking, I think, in the last few years than we have, you know, for decades. But it's been going on since the dawn of time, basically, and been winked and nodded at for almost generations.
Absolutely.
What has taken place here societally, where now there is a much greater awareness and some avenues being taken to at least combat this?
Well, I think what's happened is that this is one of those crimes that's hidden in plain sight, and it's out there amongst us. And I think we've been educated more now of what the issue actually is and the scope of it. There's estimates out there that there are 48 million people worldwide enslaved in some form or fashion. I was a beat cop during the Green River era here, where the prolific killer of Gary Ridgway, who killed I don't know how many prostitutes, he was convicted of 49. He pled guilty to that, but the estimates are way over 100. And I worked that area, was not trained. We saw all the prostitutes out there, and we thought, okay, they have pimps. Or some of them didn't want to be there, maybe, but they all we weren't trained in that particular era of actually what to look for, and how do you expect citizens to know about this if cops don't know about it? So I think the awareness has come up that it's been more defined of what the problem is, whether it be in the sex trade or the work slave trade stuff. Forced labor, those kinds of things. So that has made a big impact on how this is dealt with.
So let's talk. I mean, I'm just thinking of the scope of your mission. I mean, it's gigantic. You're talking about combating a worldwide system that is literally has corrupted entire governments and enslaved tens of thousands of people, and is taking place right now. I mean, right as we are speaking, there are children, there are women, there are men that are literally being enslaved for a number of purposes. And you just, you know, I think that the labor part of this is also something that is really not been given a lot of attention. Let's talk about that for a moment.
Well, when you hear of a 14-year-old boy, a Filipino boy, that cannot get off a fishing boat for 18 months at a time because he's either his family sold him or the traffickers have told the family, look, we can educate your kid. Where he can come back and do great things in your village, and the people don't know. And the debt never gets paid off. You have girls, Syrian Christian girls, that are taken through the Balkan route into Western Europe. You heard that in the video that I wrote that you just heard, is that those were Syrian Christian girls that were captured at 14 and brought into Western Europe, raped multiple times, and then, like you heard the story, if had they been a couple of days earlier, there would have been a third girl rescued, and she was brought back to the country, was Kosovo, where she got her organs harvested. And it's just horrible to think about of the humanity or the lack of humanity of some of these traffickers. And what this concept is we've leveraged technology. That's the part I didn't mention yet, is that we have an app specific to those seven crimes where citizens can anonymously report crime. People want to talk, they're just afraid. And so once they submit a tip, they're assigned a numeric identifier. That's the only way we know them. And if their tip leads to an arrest and a charge, there's checks and balances put into it because there has to be an arrest and a charge, and they can collect $1,000 US. In some of these countries, that pays more than a year's rent. So there's an incentive that goes along with it as well. So the concept is simple. It's a matter of educating the public to submit tips of what's happening around them. And we can help beat and circumvent some of the corruption by these tips coming in.
So let's talk about the mechanics of this. So this is available worldwide. How would an American want, you know, say that they have information, they suspect that that there is someone that they know being trafficked, and this is in America. How would
America, P3 tips, go to the App Store, whichever you have, an Android or an Apple, and download it. It's free. It'll ask you a couple of questions, some information, but anything you submit through that is totally anonymous. Overseas, we're using one called TCI app, and that is the Transnational Crime Initiative, and that is specific to those seven crimes I mentioned.
How do you get a message like this out? I mean, how do you advertise in a country, you know, the Balkans or in Europe somewhere? How do you get the information out that this even exists, and how do you portray the sense of urgency that is required here?
Well, it's the typical Crime Stoppers concept where you partner the media, the police, and the public together, and we're trying now is to form, and we just filed the legal paperwork in Serbia for the first ever Crime Stoppers Global Solutions Serbia program. And we have trusted police officers in place. We're registering the program now, and hopefully by the end of November, the first overseas program will be up and running. And then we partner with the media. Media puts out public service announcements. And we have the police, the trusted police in place as well. So we have the trusted tip takers, and then we have the trusted police. We have a high echelon person that is not corrupt in charge of each one, that is responsible for investigating each one of those seven crimes I mentioned, and for those tips to come in to be investigated. And it may not be something new. An investigator may already have 80% of a case put together, but this anonymous tip that comes in puts the rest of the 20% together where they're able to go out and make an arrest. And that's a lot of our goal, is to get that information to the appropriate non-corrupt officials to make these arrests and take these traffickers off the street.
When you're talking about the law enforcement in other countries, and you're, you know, you've emphasized that you have trusted people. You know, what are the penalties for crimes like this? Or do you see them being enforced, across the board, or is it is there a wink and a nod a lot of times?
Well, it's hard to say. But what it does, it puts another layer of fear for the traffickers, or a way if they ever had to work around this. But it's hard to fight an anonymous tip that comes in and they have corroborative evidence to back it up. So hard evidence. So could a corrupt official pay somebody off? Of course, but at least it puts more fear into the trafficker, and it's a great tool for law enforcement to gain intel.
Can you give me a case that came to fruition? Just talk about, put it on a personal level, something you have actually seen where this worked and someone who was basically enslaved was freed.
Yes, we had just here in Seattle, we had a case in one of our suburbs where some Chinese were held in a slave labor making knockoff Gucci's in a garage, and they were an anonymous tip came in from a neighbor through the P3 Tips app, and they were arrested, and also a prostitution ring was busted in the same area due to anonymous tips.
That's pretty effective. How about in Europe? What can you give me an example of? Let me ask you this. I guess one of my questions is there a difference in the victimization in Europe and the Balkans, et cetera, and here?
No. I would think the victimization is pretty similar, except that I when I mentioned in the video that the top three countries of child sex trafficking is India, Brazil, and I mentioned sadly the United States, is that it is going on under our noses, and I think that the more we advertise and the more we get the word out that we can stop a lot of this stuff. And my idea was, when I first thought of this process, was you think of your home country first, example, the United States. And I thought, if you could hit these crimes at the source or the transit routes before it gets to the United States or the Western world, is I think you can have a big impact on slowing it down. But once you get over to these countries and you see some of the people, is that obviously your heart just opens up. I mean, people say, "Well, you've been in police work for closer to 50 years, and you must be hard as nails." And it's actually the opposite, as you well know, Randy. The heart gets softer, and it makes you want to do the right thing, makes you want to help these people. Just the humanity of it all some of these issues have got to be stopped. And I'm doing my best. My group is doing its best.
So, is there, we're talking that this is an international issue. Is it
absolutely?
Is it common for young girls or victims to be taken from their home countries to the United States to enter this world? Is it common for these young girls or women or victims of trafficking to be transported from their native countries like Brazil and other places to the United States for the reasons of being trafficked?
Yes, under promise of a better life. And what happens is the traffickers hold their passports. They have, I'm putting in air quotes, debts to pay off that never get paid off. So they have to continue to work in that field. And how are they kept in place? They're threatened with their lives. Their families' lives are threatened if they don't do what they're told.
Does organized crime play a major role in this?
Well, I would have to say yes, but I don't think it's your traditional organized crime. Traffickers have you're talking different countries where people. It's all about the money, where people are getting paid off as these girls, weapons, drugs are trafficked through different borders. There's different groups that have their hand out.
You said something, you made reference to something that I found really, really chilling. And that was the young girl whose organs were harvested. Tell me about that. I mean, that's like something out of a horror movie.
Yeah, I was in Serbia in June, and I met with a anti-trafficking group that is actually pretty obscure. They had to, they were in a old building. No one really knew where they were, and that was for their own protection. You know, traffickers don't like people that are come, you know, mess with their business. So we were able to meet with these people, and that's where I heard the story you heard in the video, where they were trying to rescue. They heard about these Syrian Christian girls, and they were 14. They'd been enslaved for 2 years in Western Europe. They were brought back into Eastern Europe, and they had heard about it. Were going to rescue these girls, and they'd been planning it for about a week. Well, they were 2 days too late for the third girl who had been, the other girls told they had been trafficked back to Kosovo, and her organs were harvested there.
That's something that I just find, it sends chills down my spine to even think about it.
It's cold-blooded murder is what it is.
What are the penalties in these other countries when is there a hunger in these other countries to actively investigate and punish these animals that are doing this?
There's corruption, yes, but there are some humane, hardworking, ethical police officers that want to do the right thing. And I've run across both. I'm hopeful that is most of them just trying to do their job and do the right thing. But there's the other side as well. And that's why the information that comes from these tips has to be guarded, because it could definitely be abused.
Where do you get your funding? Because this is a king size task.
Yeah.
Where do you get your funding for?
Well, we had to start somewhere, and was the Balkans the right place to start? You know, be honest with you, I don't know. That's where I had my trusted policeman. I knew of trafficking incidents, big trafficking stuff, especially with guns, and guns and drugs. And I the way that I went, and that's how we formed it. So the funding initially, I'm an operational guy, so I needed the political side. I don't know if you remember retired Congressman Dave Reichert. He was our sheriff here in Seattle for a number of years, and I have his former chief of staff on board. I have a lobbyist in D.C. for the political side, and I have a Serb American woman, another PhD out of Florida, whose family is well connected, that helped us move up the chain with the Serbian government to move this forward, and it's in place. The program's being registered, and like I said, hopefully it'll be up and running in November. But funding has been private so far. We're working on getting our federal funding through a contract, and hopefully the information that we get from these tips will be very useful for our people here in the U.S.
So this is, in essence, a very new endeavor, and it's a major challenge to create something that is, in essence, kind of an experiment. You've had success with the model, but now you're bringing it internationally. I mean, I personally think this is an amazing organization and something that is absolutely necessary. Is there anything else out internationally that that works to free these people?
Well, yes, there are a lot of organizations that are there. The problem is that they're loosely knit in there. And a lot of them haven't combined forces. A lot of them are strictly statisticians and not a law enforcement arrest rescue element of things. There are several out there. There's actually the International Justice Mission that's a lot of Southeast Asia. There is also the Exodus Road, a phenomenal group that works Southeast Asia and India, but as far as this concept, the Crime Stoppers concept, there is an international group out there but their concept is strictly all crimes and for their countries. This concept of taking these set crimes without borders, and globalizing it has not been done.
I think I love this concept. I really do. Is there physical danger involved here to your staff and the people that are involved in this? I mean, you're going after some serious bad guys.
Of course, we're when we go over there, if you go to our website and you go to the media page, you can see we are all over their media when we go over there. And why? Because we're trying to get the word out. Or public, not only government support, but the public support as well. So as arrests start coming, I guess we'll see. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we will. Well, so how can my listeners support this endeavor?
www.thecsgs.org. It's a great big donate button on there, and we surely appreciate it. 501c3, it's tax deductible, and every dime that's given goes directly towards the cause.
Well, once again, that's thecsgs.org, and I really want to take thank you so much for taking the time, Jim, to join me here on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Your endeavor is noble, and it's an adventure. It's an adventure. I can tell you that. I can see your passion for this, and I just want to congratulate you for bringing this idea to fruition and actually changing the course of history for many of these victims.
I so much appreciate it. It's just, I can't tell you, it's the right thing to do. And I am committed. Our board's committed, and we're gonna move this forward. We're gonna stop some of these guys.
Love it. Thanks again, Jim.
Thank you.
There's something very important I want you to do for me. If you've been listening to the Voice of American Law Enforcement for any time, you know that we are very dedicated to the law enforcement community here. I would like you to go to a website. It's www.thewoundedblue.org. I want you to read about how we at this organization are aiding injured and disabled law enforcement officers. If you are a law enforcement officer and you have been injured or disabled and you feel forgotten and alone, this is why we exist. We have a fully trained peer support team. all made of police officers who have been shot, stabbed, beaten, run over, screwed up, and screwed up. They know what you're going through, and we exist for you. You are the part of the Blue family, and you deserve to be treated with respect and dignity. Unfortunately, many police agencies and cities do not treat their officers with respect and dignity when they are injured, either physically or emotionally. So go to thewoundedblue.org. If you are a citizen and you want to help, please check out how you can join the Wounded Blue. And if you're a police officer or have been, exist for you. So check out thewoundedblue.org. Now, I would also urge you to see our film. It is on Amazon, it is on iTunes, it's the Microsoft Store, it's pretty much every platform you can imagine. It's called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. You would be shocked at how the men and women of this, you know, the law enforcement community in this country, many are being treated with such disrespect. Many people, most people, even cops, believe that if you are severely injured in the line of duty, you're going to be taken care of financially and emotionally. In many cases, that is not true. Please watch the film and help the Wounded Blue.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Here on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we honor the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice, given their lives in the line of duty. Unfortunately, this week I have two names to read. The first is Trooper Peter Stephen of the Indiana State Police. Trooper Peter Stephen was killed in a single vehicle crash on Old State Road 25 near Stair Road while responding to assist another deputy at the scene of a crash near Americus. His patrol car left the roadway as he entered a curve and overturned before striking a utility pole. He succumbed to his injuries at the scene. Trooper Stephen has served with the Indiana State Police for 4 years. He is survived by his wife and 6-month-old daughter. Trooper Peter Stephen, Indiana State Police, Indiana. End of Watch, Friday, October 11th, 2019. The second officer was Deputy Sheriff Matt Jones of the Falls County Sheriff's Office in Texas. Deputy Sheriff Matt Jones was struck and killed by a vehicle as he and the chief of the Risell Police Department assisted a disabled motorist on Texas 6 near County Road 190. Another vehicle approaching the scene hydroplaned on the wet road and struck both officers. Deputy Jones was killed and the police chief was seriously injured. Deputy Jones' canine partner was in their patrol car and was not injured. Deputy Jones has served the Falls County Sheriff's Office for 4 years. He is survived by his wife, parents, and siblings. Deputy Sheriff Matt Jones, Falls County Sheriff's Office, Texas. End of Watch, Friday, October 11th, 2019. Thanks for tuning in this week to another episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, here on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Join me on Facebook at the voice of American law enforcement. If you're a Twitter, I'm at LT Randy Sutton. And always support wounded and disabled police officers by going to thewoundedblue.org. That's thewoundedblue.org. And do what you can to help these men and women who have sacrificed so much for their communities. See you next week.